got a sprain or an itch.
Welcome to another edition of Hey Doc. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, Medical Director and Physician at Southside Medical Center, right here in Jacksonville, Florida. I am your host for the next half hour. With me today is my co-host and wife, Carmen Lasky, a certified EMT. Together, we hope that you will find the show informative, educational, as well as entertaining. So, let me ask you something. Can you define the word respiration? I can't hear you. Say it louder. How would you define respiration? Oh, I just heard someone say that respiration is the same as breathing. Well, that's partly right. As a matter of fact, respiration is something that asthmatics often have problems with. So we could equate respiration with breathing, although you would be missing a great deal of the actual process of respiration if that was all that it was.
You do know that on the cellular level, you could say that respiration is a chemical reaction that takes place in cells and allows them to release energy. That is why the body needs it. It needs respiration to get energy to run the process that are necessary to sustain our lives.
We breathe in to get the oxygen that our bodies need as an energy source. And we also need glucose or sugar for the other chemical the body needs. There is a chemical formula that can be summed up in just a few words. Oxygen plus glucose gives us water and energy. Actually, to be more complete, the formula should really say the oxygen plus glucose yields water and carbon dioxide plus energy, with the carbon dioxide being the waste product of the reaction.
So we breathe to get oxygen, and we eat to get glucose. Once these get together, the waste product, carbon dioxide of CO2, gets released, a good part of which is removed in the final process of breathing as we exhale.
Let's get a little bit more into the complexities of nutrition. Glucose is a type of sugar and is moved from our digestive system into the blood of the small intestines. Oxygen, on the other hand, is a gas. We take it from the air when we breathe in, and it moves from our lungs. As our formula shows, the product of the reaction between sugar and oxygen are water and carbon dioxide. Water is a product of respiration that goes into the surrounding tissues. Carbon dioxide also is a gas, and it's made during respiration. As the lungs work, the carbon dioxide moves from the blood to the lungs, and when we breathe out, we get rid of the carbon dioxide from our body into the air. So if pulmonary respiration is compromised, then the body does not get enough oxygen and it accumulates too much carbon dioxide.
Getting back to asthma, by definition, asthma is the reversible obstruction with normal lung function in between exacerbations, characterized by airway inflammation. Patients who are always short of breath probably do not have asthma or do not have asthma alone. But people who have bursts of shortness of breath, which comes and goes, probably do.
A is for asthma.
A dry cough does suggest asthma, while a productive cough suggests, well, something else. So if the symptoms are intermittent, then something must cause these intermittent symptoms. We can call them asthma triggers. For example, dry or cold air, exercise, cooking chemicals, and detergents can lead to bronchospasm, which is narrowing of the respiratory tubes. So if one knows the triggers, then avoiding them can help lessen the number and intensity of asthma attacks.
In, out, that's what breathing's all about.
Asthma. It means once in a while I can't breathe so well.
Cold symptoms that last 6 to 8 weeks can often be followed by an asthma attack. Of course, any allergy history such as hay fever or allergies to pets such as dogs, and cats can lead to asthma symptoms.
There are many symptoms that are related to asthma, but not necessarily a direct symptom of asthma. Now, this includes acid reflux. This is really pretty very common and may be the cause of the patient's symptoms or just an aggravating trigger.
Snap right there, fella.
What's the problem?
Get to the treatment. We want to hear about treating asthma, not all that other stuff.
Are you sure?
Yep.
Okay, let's get on with the treatment.
You can divide asthma treatment into three basic types. First are the bronchodilators that increase the lumen of the respiratory tract. Then we have the anti-inflammatories, and finally the steroid, which are also a type of anti-inflammatory.
But we can also divide the treatment medications between rescue inhalers, which help you once you have your asthma attack, and controller inhalers that prevent the symptoms, such as the steroids. But in severe cases, you may also need longer-acting inhalers that keep the airways open in addition to the steroids, such as formoterol, salmeterol, and tiotropium.
Hit it! Many things around me might give me trouble breathing right. Could be the puppy, could be the kitten, could be the dust on its furry mittens. So when I want to run and play, just clean the dust away.
Hey, where's the
meat? All right, we're getting to it.
We could start with a treatment history lesson and begin with the early less effective medications. And we may get to those. But right now, I would like us to talk about some of the more modern medications and how they have changed the playing field for many asthmatics.
So let's begin with a newer medication that goes by the name Dupixent. It's a prescription medicine that is used along with other asthma medicines. It is used strictly as a maintenance medication for moderate to severe asthma and only in people aged 12 years and older and whose asthma is not controlled with the other current asthma medicines.
Again, remember that Dupixent is not used in the treatment of acute symptoms. Basically, you could say that it is used in the treatment plan along with other medications to prevent the start of asthma attacks. It may also help reduce the amount of oral corticosteroids you need.
Again, we can't stress it enough. Dupixent is not used to treat sudden breathing problems, but this certainly does not make this medication less important than those medications that treat the acute breathing problem. Its generic name is dupilumab. It's given as an injection, often with an initial dose of a total of 400 milligrams. That's two 200-milligram pre-filled syringes. After that initial dose, in 2 weeks, and then every other week, a single injection of 200 milligrams is given. Now, it's most often used in what is called OCS asthma. In other words, only in asthma patients who have already been treated with the maximum inhaled treatments and are still unable to maintain asthma control. Thus, they require additional therapy with the oral corticosteroids. That's what the acronym OCS stands for, oral corticosteroids.
The reason this is needed is because daily use of oral corticosteroids is associated with significant systemic adverse effects that affect many body systems and have a direct association with the dose and duration of OCS use.
There is another medication with the brand name of Fasenra, which has a similar generic name to that of Dupixent. The generic of Fasenra is benralizumab, in contrast to Dupixent, whose generic name is dupilumab. And I did not want to do tongue twisters today. So?
Time out for a tongue twister. Here he goes.
The main treatment for severe asthma is long-term control medications that help prevent asthma symptoms. These medications include inhaled corticosteroids, long-acting beta agonists, long-acting anticholinergics, leukotriene modifiers, chromalin sodium theophylline, and the oral corticosteroids.
Then you can take quick relief medications when you have an asthma attack to relieve symptoms. Now, these include inhaled short-acting beta agonists, short-acting anticholinergics, a combination of an inhaled short-acting anticholinergic and inhaled short-acting beta agonist.
Well, it's time for our mid-show break. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky with Carmen Lasky, and this is Hey Doc. This is a great time to tell you about Southside Medical Center. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, and I've been the medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center for the past 29 years. We're located at 3604 Southside Boulevard, just two blocks south of the Beach Boulevard intersection between the Pottsburg Post Office and the Tulsa Welding School. We will treat your pains, sprains, and strains. Our practice emphasizes chronic pain management as well as anti-aging medicine. We also have an office-based substance treatment program for those who need it. Southside Medical Center is open 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. If you would like to make an appointment or ask any questions about Southside Medical Center, please call us at 641-4411. That's 641-4411. Southside Medical Center, where your health is our primary care. Welcome back to the Hey Doc Show. Carmen and I are going to continue our treatment of asthma treatments. Every breath you take. A few newer treatments have made severe asthma even easier to control. These include what are called the biologics that work with your immune system to treat asthma. They block the activity of immune system chemicals that make your airway swell up. These drugs can prevent you from getting asthma attacks and make the attacks you do have much milder.
Then there are four monoclonal antibodies approved to treat severe asthma. These include the medications that end with last five letters, Sumab. These include Reslizumab or Cinquer, Mepolizumab or Nucala, Omalizumab, brand name Solaire, and finally, Benralizumab or Fasenra.
Alizumab treats severe asthma that's triggered by allergies. On the other hand, Mepolizumab, Reslizumab, and Benralizumab treat severe asthma that's caused by a type of white blood cell called an eosinophil, thus again making the name of this type of asthma eosinophilic asthma. You take these drugs by injection or through an IV into the vein. New monoclonal antibodies such as tezepelumab are under investigation. I bet you heard of tiotropium. Not a familiar name? Well, maybe you recognize its TV ad name as Spiriva. This inhaled medication has been used to treat chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, that's COPD, for more than a decade. In 2015, the FDA also approved it for the treatment of asthma. Now, studies do show that tiotropium improves asthma control when added to high doses of inhaled corticosteroids plus short-acting beta agonists.
Let's talk about leukotriene modifiers. These drugs work by blocking the action of leukotriene, which is a chemical that tightens and narrows your airway during an allergy-induced asthma attack. In other words, these loosen and widen the airway by blocking the leukotrienes.
These include montelukast, as well known as Singulair, zafirlukast, or Acalate, and Zilutin, brand name Zyflo. These are all oral medications that you take to prevent or treat asthma attacks. And finally, for today's show, we present bronchial thermoplasty, which is a surgical technique used for treating asthma that simply hasn't improved with other treatments. Now, during this technique, radio frequency energy is applied to the airways. The heat that's generated destroys some of the smooth muscle lining the airway. This prevents the muscle from constricting and narrowing the opening.
Bronchial thermoplasty is delivered in three sessions, each given 3 weeks apart. Although it isn't a cure for asthma, it often does reduce symptoms. We are still searching for new drugs that will be able to prevent and relieve asthma symptoms. One drug that has generated a lot of excitement is Fevipiprant, QAW039.
Although this drug is still in development, this experimental drug reduced symptoms and improved lung function in people with allergic asthma that inhaled corticosteroids and couldn't control it.
If Fevipiprant is approved, it will be the first new oral asthma drug to be introduced in 20 years. Other studies are investigating the factors that play a role in asthma development, identifying the triggers that set off asthma symptoms could one day enable researchers to stop those processes and prevent asthma before it starts.
When a patient first visits a physician with possible asthma, meaning that person has some type of respiratory problem, then the physician will do a lung exam. The doctor will listen for a cough as well as expiratory wheezing. This means a whistle-like sound when breathing out, not in. This sound does not define asthma, but is suggestive.
They may look for the sign of clubbing in the fingers. If you have never heard of that term, clubbing simply means the rounding and widening of the tips of one or more fingers and the nail beds. It is a symptom of several diseases, often of the heart or lungs, which are due to long-term low blood levels of oxygen. Diseases which cause malabsorption, such as cystic fibrosis or cilia disease, can also cause clubbing apart from asthma.
You may also see peripheral edema, meaning swelling in the outer arms and hands, as well as the feet and ankles. There is often a loud heart murmur that is heard in patients with asthma. Pulmonary function testing, or PFTs, may be performed. Now, here a machine is used to measure all aspects of a person's breathing. You may be asked to take a deep breath in, hold it, and then breathe out for as deep and as long as you can. Then the computer in the machine measures various numbers. The amount of air that is inhaled and exhaled, as well as how fast you breathe, can be done, and these are all counted.
One can measure something called the diffusion capacity, which is simply a measure of how well oxygen and carbon dioxide are transferred between the lungs and the blood.
As you know, both oxygen and carbon dioxide both need to pass through a thin layer in the lungs. This is the layer between the small air sacs in the lungs that are called the alveoli and the smallest blood vessels that travel through the lungs called the capillaries. How well oxygen that is inhaled can pass, which is another word for diffuse, from the alveoli into the blood, and how well carbon dioxide can pass from the blood capillaries into the alveoli and be exhaled, depends on how thick this membrane is and how much surface area is available for the transfer to take place. So what does it mean when the test discloses a low diffusion capacity?
To answer this, we have to understand the two separate mechanisms by which diffusing capacity may be reduced. Diffusing capacity may be low if a lung disease is present that causes the membrane to be thicker. This can happen in diseases such as pulmonary fibrosis and sarcoidosis.
Diffusing capacity may also be low if there is less surface area available for the transfer of oxygen and carbon dioxide, for example, with emphysema, or if a lung or part of a lung is removed for lung cancer. Now you may ask, how do you test for diffusing capacity?
Testing for diffusing capacity is often done along with other pulmonary function tests. In this test, a mask is placed over your face. During the test, you will take in a deep breath or a gas, hold your breath, and then the air that you exhale will be measured. In this test, it will give you a gas that is a combination of two gases, carbon monoxide, as well as a tracer gas such as helium.
I bet when you heard Carmen say that you said to yourself, wait a minute, did you say carbon monoxide? Well, yes, she did. Note that these are inhaled in very small amounts, and this is not a dangerous test. When the exhaled gas is exhaled, doctors may then determine how much carbon dioxide and helium diffused across the alveoli into the capillaries by determining the difference between that which is inhaled and that which is exhaled. Now, there are many causes of low diffusing capacity, and these include emphysema, asthma, and lung cancer. Also, pulmonary embolism and blood clots in the lungs can also cause a low diffusing capacity.
So, if the diffusion capacity is normal, then an asthma diagnosis becomes more likely. If it is abnormal, then more workup will simply be necessary to get a diagnosis. 99% of the time, the patient's PFDs should be normal in a patient with asthma.
Another test called spirometry, if abnormal initially, and then treated and reevaluated as still being abnormal, then you just might consider another diagnosis. Should a physician order blood tests in a patient with asthma? Remember when we mentioned eosinophilia as a type of asthma? Well, the eosinophils are a type of white blood cell. So doing a CBC, which includes numbers related to the various white blood cells as well as red cells, would be appropriate.
If a person with symptoms of asthma has had a history of allergies, then another blood test called serum immunoglobulin E, as well as an allergen panel, would be indicated as well.
Whenever there is a chronic cough, order a sputum culture.
Oftentimes, a sputum culture should be accompanied by a fungal culture to rule out fungi or chlamydia as a cause or trigger for asthma.
But let's get back one more time to treatment. Generally, a stepwise therapy is used. Often the short-acting bronchodilators such as albuterol or levobuterol. First-line maintenance may also include inhaled steroids. The second-line maintenance, that is the long-acting beta agonist, is never to be used alone in asthma.
When these tests fail to help sufficiently, the next step is to increase doses of inhaled therapies, such as adding a leukotriene inhibitor, such as montelukast, and then antihistamines, if clinically indicated. One last piece of information. Antifungal treatments could help asthma patients breathe easier, even if they are not allergic to fungus. Texas researchers have found in a new study that demonstrated the effectiveness of antifungal therapy in asthma and chronic sinusitis in treating severe asthmatics.
Antifungals such as Diflucan and Sporanox have been used in treating fungal infections, and the treatment of chlamydia pneumoniae infection in adult asthma using medications such as doxycycline, azithromycin, and even erythromycin have been successful. I'd like you, our listeners, to know that I am one of several physicians right here in the Jacksonville area that has received the certification to recommend medical marijuana to those patients with certain qualifying diagnoses. These now include amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, cancer, Crohn's disease, epilepsy, glaucoma, HIV/AIDS, seizure disorders, chronic muscle spasms, multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's disease, PTSD, a terminal condition, as well as other ailments and conditions, including certain diseases with chronic or long-term pain. For more information, you can call our office at 641-4411. We've also set up a website for our Medical Marijuana Society at www.medmarsoc.com. That's www.medmarsoc.com. We have also set up a special website at CompassionateCareJax.com, where you can get a whole lot more information on medical marijuana. You can also set up an appointment for an office visit to Southside Medical Center right on the website. Again, that website is CompassionateCareJax.com. Well, we've come to the end of another Hey Doc show. Carmen and I hope that you've enjoyed the past half hour and have found it interesting, educational, and maybe just a little bit entertaining.
So, from all of us here at Southside Medical Center, have a happy and healthy weekend. Goodbye.